Fox News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
There are just 22 days to go until the polls open across the country. In fact, though, early voting is already well underway in much of the country. Thanks for counting down with us. I'm Margaret Carrero, joined today by Mike Simpson, who's sitting in for Charles Feldman. On today's Countdown 2024, is Donald Trump too old to be president? We're going to examine a very sensitive issue here, one that eventually chased Joe Biden out of the race for the White House. And in the second part of today's show, can a Republican succeed Adam Schiff in Congress and flip his safe Democratic seat? We will talk with the man who is trying to do just that. But first, this.
Ton of new polling dropping over the weekend, giving us a snapshot view of the presidential race between Trump and Harris. Stop me if you heard this one before. It's going to be really, really close. All three of the major networks releasing new polls. CBS with Harris up by 3. ABC with Harris up by 2. NBC says no, dead heat. This all comes as the Dems are feeling increasingly nervous about the direction of the race. Stories about anxiety soaring on perceptions that Kamala Harris has been sinking in some of the latest polls. But most analysts agree things have been pretty stable, and they're going to stay pretty stable all the way up to November 5th.
Yet more polling to tell you about, but this time looking at the close Senate races in several battleground states, and this poll comes from an internal Republican source. The top GOP super PAC tasked with flipping control of the Senate has found that most of its candidates are trailing their Democratic opponents. Republicans are trailing in all of the races aside from Montana. That's where Democratic incumbent John Tester is behind Tim Sheehy. Ted Cruz in Texas also has a surprisingly competitive race up by just 1 point over his Democratic challenger, Colin Allred.
Donald Trump on Fox News, not too unusual, right? He's going to tape another town hall with Fox News on Tuesday. Kamala Harris has not been on a one-on-one on the network yet. That changes this week. A VP is going to sit down for a 30-minute conversation with Fox anchor Bret Baier. Trump's town hall is focused on women's issues. It tapes tomorrow, and then it airs on Wednesday.
So back when President Biden was still in the race, do you remember that? Donald Trump certainly did not hold back with his thoughts on the aging president, calling Biden incapable of being in the White House because of his mental decline. He has said the same type of things about Kamala Harris just this morning, calling on the vice president to take a cognitive test. But is Donald Trump the one who is now too old, with too much decline in his abilities to be the ruler of the free world? That is the question we're going to be talking about today. Peter Baker is chief White House correspondent at the New York Times, where he wrote about Trump's age. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, you know, you had this recent article about Donald Trump's speeches and the question of his age, and I just want to read an excerpt from that. It said, Mr. Trump has seemed confused, forgetful, incoherent, or disconnected from reality lately. In fact, it happens so often these days that it no longer even generates much attention. Isn't that problematic, the fact that it's happening so often that it doesn't even generate a lot of attention?
Well, it is. I mean, look, you know, a lot of people have gotten used to Trump's rather unusual and discursive speaking patterns over the years. What's interesting is that if you watch the rallies as extensively as we have now for the story, what you notice is that that has changed, that it's no longer just what it was in 2015, 2016 when he first came on the stage. That the speeches today, they're darker, they're longer, they're less focused, they're more fixated on grievance, they use more negative words, they use more profane words. And doctors say, you know, this can be a sign of aging, and yet we don't know, of course, for sure. Diagnosing from afar is always a problem. But you're right to say that when Joe Biden was in the race, we spent a lot of time analyzing what it would mean to have an 81-year-old reelected as president. Now we've been talking about a 78-year-old being elected as president. He would still be he's already the oldest party nominee in history. He'd be the oldest president if he finishes out a second term.
You talked about how the speaking style used to be and kind of was always this way. He calls it the weave, right? Or some other people have called it that, where he starts somewhere and then he goes somewhere else for a while and does a few things, and then he all comes back and he lands where he wants to. But that is what, going on longer than it ever did, or he's weaving too far in different directions, and it's harder to keep track from one point to another if it ever comes back to the first point he was trying to make.
Yeah, it doesn't always come back. That's right. Exactly. He never finishes, often doesn't finish the thought, doesn't finish a sentence, or heads off in digressions that seem totally unrelated to where he started. In the medical field, they call this tangentiality, and as in heading off on tangents. And some of them can be kind of odd, you know, in talking about, you know, illegal immigrants. He gets off on a rant about how today's Hollywood stars don't have enough muscle mass, or talking about Joe Biden being on the beach sunbathing. He heads off into this riff about Clark Gable and, you know, sorry, Cary Grant, even not Clark Gable, Cary Grant and what he looked like in a swimsuit. And it strikes a lot of people who hear it as pretty hard to follow. On the other hand, people at his rallies, they do seem to like it. They are entertained by it. They find it sort of captivating in its own way. But a lot of people are looking at this and saying, are there signs of age here? And remember, most polls show that a majority of the public, while they were more concerned with Biden's age, they're also concerned with Trump's age.
You know, the Trump campaign says he's in perfect and excellent health in order to be the president of the United States. If he is in such perfect health, then why not release his medical records?
Now, excellent question. You're absolutely right about that. He's never released full medical records. Even the summaries that have been released while he was in office were, you know, scant in detail at times. Vice President Kamala Harris, just over the weekend, I believe it was, released at least a two-page summary of her latest medical results, not a full set of records, of course, but more than we've seen from the former president. And you're right. A lot of people say, OK, if you're so healthy, let's see the receipts. The last thing that they released was like a one page, I think, or two page letter from his former White House physician, Ronny Jackson, who's now a congressman, a pretty conservative Republican congressman, who basically said that he had been with the president following his attempted assassination in Butler, Pennsylvania. And he was doing well. That was the sum total of his medical diagnosis at that point. So we don't have the, you know, a full on examination or the results of where he is at this point.
We're speaking with Peter Baker, chief White House correspondent of the New York Times. Why was there so much more coverage of Biden? Did it? I mean, especially after the debate, just seemed like he was more frail. Trump, despite the age, despite the tangents, he's always had more energy.
Yeah. I think the difference, obviously, is about physicality, right? So President Biden looks frail. He shuffles when he walks across the stage. He has a hard time projecting his voice. His voice isn't very strong right now. So on top of the, you know, confusion over names or, you know, sort of the digressions that he has, it was the physicality, I think, that struck a lot of Americans as particularly concerning, that he looked old. And you're right. Former President Trump doesn't look old in the same way. He does seem to have more energy. He certainly has more volume, right? When he gets up there on a stage, he is bellowing. He is bombastic. He is strong. And that's what he wants to project. And that sort of covers, in a way, for the actual, you know, digressions in the speech itself. If you were to not listen to the volume, but were actually to sit there and to diagram the sentences, you probably have a hard time coming with a noun and a verb and an object, and your English teacher wouldn't exactly make this an example of good speech. But because he seems so energetic, a lot of people haven't asked the same questions that they asked about President Biden.
You covered Trump's first presidency. You wrote a book on it with your wife. I wonder, other than just the way his speeches are going, what other differences do you see in him now as he's seeking a second term, and what concerns you most?
Well, there are a few other things. He, you know, obviously, we just talked about his energy. It still seems good, but he does have moments where he seems fatigued. Remember, in his court trial in New York, he nodded off at a number of occasions during the proceedings. He isn't doing nearly as many rallies this year as he did his first presidential campaign, roughly about, you know, one fifth or one sixth as many rallies as he did back then. So he's clearly not, you know, running around the country with the same degree of you know, energy and work ethic than he had back then. You also hear from some people who spent time with him that he can be more forgetful. For instance, an author of a book about his days on The Apprentice told me that when he went to go interview him at Mar-a-Lago, he found that not only did former President Trump not remember what they had talked about, he didn't even remember meeting the author, even though it was just a couple months earlier and they had a long conversation about a topic that he generally likes. And during these conversations, he said the former president could remember very crystal clear the days on the TV show, even if they were sometimes fabricated. But he couldn't remember nearly as clearly his days in the presidency.
For people going, you know, Peter, I don't understand why this isn't more of a focus, why the Harris campaign doesn't bring it up more. Is it tough for them, given the whole, you know, floor ceiling idea with the election? A certain level of his base, he always has it. He's going to have it. Maybe he's got the ceiling to win the electoral votes. I mean, they're still going to vote for him.
Yeah, I don't think that his supporters are very turned off by any questions about him, whether it be, questions of his age or whether it be questions of, his criminal convictions or questions about, his policies or anything else. I think they've been very solid for him all along, right? About 45% of the public or so has been rock solid for him. That's been that way for the last several years. It hasn't really gone up, but it hasn't gone down. It's been immune to events, right? Even when something happens that would normally hobble a normal politician, like being indicted, it hasn't actually hurt him, even with a lot of the people who say that they're not particularly fans of his. On the other hand, even the assassination attempts, which might normally generate more sympathy for a politician, haven't caused people to come out for him either. So it hasn't really, I think the electorate is in such a polarized state that people know what they think, except for a very small handful of people who haven't made up their minds, and they're not really open to persuasion one way or the other.
All right, Peter Baker, Chief White House Correspondent at The New York Times. Thank you for taking some time for us here on Countdown 2024. Coming up, we are going to talk with a Republican who is trying to pull off what seems to be impossible, flipping Adam Schiff's old congressional seat red. That's next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Yeah, here we are. Thanks for sticking with us on a Monday with Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Mike Simpson, sitting in for Charles Feldman.
Adam Schiff has arguably been one of California's most recognizable and popular members of Congress for several years now, further bolstered by the fact that Schiff appears to be cruising to his election as the state's next U.S. senator. He will leave behind a House district that has voted Democratic with just a handful of exceptions since 1990. Alex Balekian, he's trying to change that, and he is not your typical Republican. The 45-year-old is gay and married, and he's been seeking out a lot of middle ground positions on issues like abortion and immigration. Alex Balekian, candidate for the 30th District House seat, joining us now on Countdown 2024. Alex, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Margaret and Mike.
You know, you've described yourself as a Duke Majan Republican, of course, referring to former California Governor George Duke Majan. What does that look like in your eyes?
So, briefly speaking, it means public safety, stay out of my bank account, stay out of my personal life. It's fiscally conservative and socially sane. I think the Republican Party in California has suffered immeasurably because they wanted to interfere in people's personal decisions on abortion, on gay marriage. I say, let people do what they're going to do personally in their homes, keep the taxes low, keep the government efficient, and just maintain our public safety. And I think everybody's going to be just better off for it.
What's the response you get from people who you tell that to? Because I'm hearing, in the cars, people driving around right now, they're going, okay, well, I know how this guy got in here as a Republican. It's because there were like 15 people running for this thing and all the Democrats split the vote. So now he's here.
I wholeheartedly disagree with you because there were three top Democrats and that would have been 33% each person. So what happened was our message resonated with people, number one. Number two, everybody, and when I say everybody, moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans, and independents in the middle are ready for change. It's really no longer Democrat versus Republican. It is progressive versus non-progressive. And we can all see the changes, not for the better, that have occurred over the last 10 or 15 years. And we all know that progressive isn't working. Again, we've surprised everybody. We were on nobody's bingo card in March 2024. So it's really our message that has resonated. And the fact that I'm not a career politician, I am a practicing physician, and I'm running this campaign at the same time as I'm running my practice. So I have real world credentials that people are gravitating towards.
I read that you love crashing a party. Is that what you're hoping to do on November 5th?
Bingo cards in hand. He's ready.
Yes, bingo cards and crashing the party.
Yes. Again, people are very frustrated from both sides of the aisle, and I give them a viable alternative who is going to maintain public safety, who is going to operate government efficiently, and is going to focus its effort on us, its citizens, the taxpayers. And as I said, I'm not just going to try to run people's private lives. Your home is your home.
I heard the word progressive a couple times. Your opponent is described that way, Laura Friedman, sort of how she's positioned herself up in Sacramento, bills to legalize the anti-speeding cameras and ban, forever chemicals and things. Do you agree with any of what she's done? What do you like from her that you would maybe, as more moderate Republicans, you describe yourself, work into what you want to do?
So I'm not calling her a progressive. She is the founding member of the California Legislative Progressive Caucus in the State Assembly. So she is, you know, she is the queen mother of the progressive movement. And again, I'm just going to bring this back to public safety. She authored a bill to give clean needles and safe injection spaces to drug users. I want to eliminate the tent cities and the drug use. She wants to enable it. The law was so bad, even Gavin Newsom thought it was bad and vetoed it. I support Nathan Hochman for DA. I support Prop 36. She supports the reelection of George Gascon, and we have her on camera saying that she supports the reelection of George Gascon. Just simply go to georgeandlaura.com and you'll see it. We, the people, the California citizens, put Prop 36 on the ballot. She and her constituents, she and her partners up there in the legislature, put a competing measure against Prop 36 because they thought that the punishments that we wanted to bring were too stiff. So she has shown us in her actions, in her votes, in the legislation that she has authored, that public safety has gotten worse. Again, crime has gotten worse on her watch as an assembly member over the last 10 years. So, homelessness has gotten worse. The cost of living has gotten worse on her watch.
Let me ask you this. You're looking to take the seat that Adam Schiff had in Congress. That's what you're seeking. If elected, what would you bring to the table that's different?
So the first thing that I would do is I'm going to solve this homelessness crisis, because as a physician, I'm going to treat it as the mental health and drug addiction issue that it is, not simply a housing issue. Housing, 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 that is the second step. These people cannot take care of themselves. How are they going to take care of a house? So what I'm going to do as a physician, I'm going to diagnose the mental illness. I'm going to reopen the federal mental hospitals so that those severely schizophrenic homeless people get off the street and on treatment. Second, 40% of California homeless are not from this state. Their family, their support system is out of state. So overnight, we can decrease by nearly half the California homeless population. I can do that from Congress, transport people across state lines, give their home states federal funding to establish mental health clinics and also drug rehab, because the medical literature shows that when your family is involved with your mental health, with your drug rehab, you have superior outcomes. So these tent cities, those are not their family and their support system, and those are some very concrete ways that I will overnight fix homelessness, where these politicians have already wasted $26 billion of our money.
All right, hold that thought. Alex Balekian, hoping to take over for Adam Schiff in the 30th Congressional District, remaining with us to close out today's edition of Countdown 2024. Next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Mike Simpson.
Alex Balekian, Republican candidate in the 30th Congressional District, including Burbank, Glendale, and West Hollywood, remaining with us on Countdown. We should also note that Laura Friedman, who he's running against, is going to be joining us on Wednesday's show. What would your top three priorities be in Congress if you were to be sent there?
My top three priorities would be, number one, fixing homelessness. Number two, strengthening border security so that we can stave off illegal immigration and also stop the influx of fentanyl, which is flooding our streets. And then number three, my personal favorite, is balanced budget and term limits. So those are three big ones that I want to focus on.
So many races and districts across the country have turned into an argument on abortion, especially this year. The government's role, in your mind, is what?
Stay out of it. That is not your business. Stay out of it. I am a physician. I don't think anybody should insert themselves in the doctor-patient relationship. I would prefer to focus on prevention. I would prefer to focus on family planning. I'd prefer to focus on getting accessible, affordable childcare for women who want to have a baby, but see that it's going to upend their lives if they are not able to get affordable childcare. So I would rather be preventative and supportive rather than punitive.
What about solutions for the border crisis?
I mean, solutions for the border crisis. I am the son of immigrants. So my parents came here as refugees from the Middle East in the 1970s. We need a transparent points-based system. So things that you, similar as if you were applying for a job or to school, there's your GPA, your SAT score, your volunteer score. So we need to bring in skilled, industrious immigrants who have command of the English language, who have job skills that this country needs, and then we rank them as such. And what we do is those people who've entered illegally, you say there is a no-fault application, you allow them to apply, but you say, okay, you have 60 days, for example, to apply, and then you will go back and wait in the country from whence you came, because we do not want any line jumpers. We do not want to reward people who did not respect the system.
Thank you so much, Alex Balekian, Republican candidate for the 30th Congressional District. We will have the woman he is facing in the November election, Laura Friedman, joining us on Countdown 2024 on Wednesday. Meanwhile, tomorrow on Tuesday's Countdown 2024, is the Electoral College an outdated relic? And if so, how do we get rid of it? Plus, we will take a look at what seems to be non-existent campaign finance oversight in an election cycle where billions of dollars are being spent. Remember, we are here every afternoon at 2:30 through Election Day. And if you miss a show, you can catch it at 8 o'clock in the evening, Monday through Friday. Also on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.